Okay. Good afternoon. I'll call the order to be the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, February 24th, 2007. Sorry for the delay, but we had a longer than expected floor session, and so we had to give people the opportunity to get a chance to eat before we started the committee meeting. Today we have the Governor's budget recommendations for the Office of Enterprise Technology. And Mr. Khan, I believe, are you the one who's going to be telling us what the request is, or are there other people? Who's welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Gopal Khanna, the state CIO. I have here with me two of my colleagues. To my right is John Lally, Director of Strategic Planning and Portfolio Management, and to my left is Chris Busey, our Chief Information Security Officer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, for the opportunity to come and present our budget. As we were constructing our budget, there were several thoughts in our mind, and basically one that really is driving the construct of this budget is better government. At the end of the day, that's what we are in the business to do for our state. The last time I was here before this committee was on January 25th. You had asked, Mr. Chair, for us to present and give you an overview of OET. But basically the point that we made at that time was that all government services today depend upon enabling technologies, information technology solutions that are available to our workforce. And without that, they could not deliver the services, whether it be education, healthcare, public safety, or human services. Our challenge and opportunity that we have before us is to transform our government operations so that we can serve the citizens of the future, so that we can move our delivery from a 9-to-5 model to 24-by-7 model, and at the same time becomes more results and outcomes-based government operation. If you recall, we had presented this model of OET to you last time, which basically suggests that we need to really have a comprehensive program, a technology architecture platform that really serves the citizens 24-by-7, not only just the citizens, but the governments and the businesses as well. And as we do that, our challenge is to have a very strong security framework, have more e-gov and e-licensing kind of solutions available, and not forgetting that at the end of the day, it's about agency mission, and that we need to work in our federated model with agencies so that they can come up with their own agency-specific solutions to fulfill their mission, while at the same time, at the bottom of this chart, you will see trying to aggregate so that we can consolidate and get the benefit and advantage and cost savings associated with consolidation. The intent over here is to overall have a well-defined enterprise architecture, take advantage of standards wherever we can, and have a more cost-effective operating environment for the state. Going forward over the next 2 years, Mr. Chairman, members, we need to focus in five areas that are really intertwined and well and connected. So we must have a comprehensive strategy and program. Those five areas are, number one, security. Security is an ongoing threat, has been and will continue to be. We need to have a comprehensive security program for our state. Number two, we need to construct and deliver more and more e-licensing solutions, e-gov solutions, and that are citizen-centered and serve the business community. We also need to consolidate so that we can take advantage of aggregation and reduce our cost structure. An example would be bringing down number of data centers from 32 data centers right now to maybe 2 over the next few years. Build an enterprise information management program that will allow us to better manage our IT assets and IT portfolio across the executive branch of government, and finally, support the small agencies as well. With this in mind, what we're going to be presenting to you in the next few minutes, Mr. Chairman, is five initiatives that total $47.5 million, and I'm going to ask my colleague over here to my right, John Lally, to walk us through these initiatives and the details associated with them.
Mr. Lally, welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is John Lally. I'm Planning Director for the Office of Enterprise Technology. We're going to go through these as quickly as we can to leave time for questions. And We're following up on some discussions we've already had with staff to try to get some background information on its purpose. I want to point out
somebody's blocking the screen. That's one of the problems. So there you go.
Wonders of modern technology. Mr. Chairman, one thing we want to point out is that in developing these initiatives, we tied them into our master planning process and worked closely with agencies to try to ensure that the maximum leverage was generated by these initiatives. And so as we go through them, I'll try to draw some of those connections for you. The first initiative and our highest priority is for comprehensive information security. Legislative Auditor's Report, famous Legislative Auditor's Report 2 years ago, pointed out many of the internal weaknesses of security, and I wish that we could say that they were just limited to that because we've done a lot to try to address those. But the fact is we are living in an increasingly networked, increasingly complex, and increasingly dangerous world. We talk about hackers and the amount of information we have that the hackers want to get at, and I think for many of us, the vision of a hacker is some 16-year-old sitting at home, a computer wonk with his Macintosh trying to make the big guys nervous by getting into their websites. 10 or 15 years ago, that was probably true. Right now, we face a much more dangerous threat, which is of criminal activity going after information that can be used for identity theft and for financial gain. These are highly organized, highly professional, very dangerous to us and to our citizens. And that's what we're trying to present against. This is no longer against recreational computer designers. Our security system has to take a comprehensive approach to security because security is only as strong as its weakest link. So that means our policies, our operating procedures, our technologies, our intrusion detection, our ability to respond to threats all have to be uniformly good to reduce the level of risk to an acceptable level for us to conduct government. It is impossible to have a risk-free environment. There are always going to be risks if we're going to try to do anything. It's what level of risk is manageable and acceptable and protects the interests of our citizens that's going to be driving us in this discussion. We have to get a handle on this to protect our processes, our systems, and most importantly, the data that we have in our stewardship. Right now, we are seeing a tremendous increase in the volume of activity at identity theft and intrusion that is both destructive and, in some cases, hidden from view because the best kind of information theft is the one that goes undetected. The major source for information is CERT, the Computer Emergency Response Team, which is a federal government organization. And what they've seen is that in the last year, a 35% increase in intrusions, 100 million records were compromised in the last 2 years by public and private sector databases that were penetrated, systems that were lost, information that was made available inappropriately. That graph, you don't need to worry about the details on the graph, but if you look at the trend, it's an alarming trend for the last 11 years. Happening with information management, and the more networked we are and the more dependent we are on computers, the more important to try to get a handle on it.
But what caused it to kind of level off there? I mean, it goes up and then all of a sudden it goes down a little bit for 2 or 3 years and then shoots back up. Is there any explanation for that?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. Chris, do you have...
Identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Christopher Boozy. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Minnesota. I actually do not know the answer to that particular question, but I will try to go and do a little bit of research and try and find out why we had that small plateau for a year there. But I'll try and get the answer and come back to you.
It just looks funny, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, what we're trying to... There we go. Things we're going to try to do with the money that we're requesting are comprehensive in scope, and they are going to address both the technologies and the operations around information security at the enterprise level. We're going to be trying to create an environment that is inherently as secure as we can possibly make it, and then test that security and respond to threats against that security and do all in a timely fashion. Many times the intrusions that come are highly publicized when they're detected. We'd just assume nobody ever heard about any of those because that means we'd effectively interdicted them at source as much as possible. We're going to be working at a...
I'm sorry, just interrupt, yeah.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. John, Mr. Cruzzi, could that not, that plateauing not have come about because we shut down some systems for a while and so there were no additional vulnerabilities reported because some systems were just...
Chairman, Senator Rest, that is possible. The timing with 9/11 is maybe coincidental, maybe significant. We don't know for sure what it is. We'll try to get an answer for you.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Chairman and members, we're going to be trying to put both the technologies of security and the procedures of security under control across all agencies. The fact is that many agencies have no significant security presence because they're operating in isolation from one another. We've put into place over the last year a significant amount of cooperative effort to try to address some of those, but the fact remains agency budgets have been constrained, agency staff is limited. We're going to try to complement that, replace much of it with central management so that we know what's going on in the entire enterprise and can respond quickly when something happens with security. But we're also going to be proactive in security and try to create systems that are inherently more secure, create applications now that build on the new security capabilities while we're trying to protect all the legacy applications that we have in state government, which are significant and varied in their technologies that are involved. We're also going to be working on something that has been requirement for many, many years, which is a better disaster recovery potential, the possibility of major system outage affecting a critical state system is significant because there is simply not the capability for backup and recovery that we need. Major systems could be out for as long as 75 to 90 days if there's a major incident, accidental or otherwise, at one of our major data centers. What we're going to be trying to do over the next few years is to build that disaster recovery capability so that we are prepared for that. The consequences for these things are not just to government agencies. They're to the customers of government agencies and to other organizations like local government that depend on our systems to be operating and operating securely. We'll be happy to answer any questions you have about security, but at the outset of this, we know going in our systems are inadequately protected, our data is inadequately secured. The outcomes we want to achieve is a complete turnaround in that. And this is not an area where half measures are going to be successful. Having a network that is not protected against intrusion, having data that is not protected against destruction or corruption or inadvertent disclosure, is our highest priority as an agency and ought to be the highest priority for systems across the state. So we'll be working in our effort in the next year with this funding to try to turn that mechanism of security around and make it the level that citizens would require to have faith in us. We have a particular situation in government. If we as individuals choose not to use services or mechanisms, eBay, Amazon.com, if we'd rather go down to Target and pay cash, that's our choice. But the fact is, when we're talking about information systems that are central to state government, most citizens don't have a choice in that matter. And the future stability of our systems depends on this security issue being resolved. Our initiative calls for significant staff increases of specialized staff, some of it located primarily centrally within the state, some of it working with agencies to make their systems more robust. A large part of it is to get the tools of security at an enterprise level. This is more than just buying 30,000 copies of Norton Utilities or antivirus and loading it on PCs. These are enterprise-level intrusion detection and monitoring and response systems that we have to have. The next initiative is linked in many respects to the security initiative, and this is IT consolidation. At the current time, the state's technology infrastructure, networks, servers, routers, platforms that are providing application support, a lot of utility applications like email are distributed in multiple agencies. Right now, there are a large number of expensive data centers and an even larger number of bad data centers within state agencies that lack central management. It's a problem with wasting of resources because many of these are not being used to capacity, while others are significantly over capacity. Creates instability and lost opportunities for us. We want to eliminate the duplication, stabilize system, provide for 7x24 support for all of our applications, which is increasingly important in an area of electronic services, and by doing so, create a much more secure, managed, professional IT environment. This is what we're trying to do by consolidating this. Initially, it will be consolidating utility functions like emailing, scheduling, data backup and retrieval, network management, server management, and so on. Ultimately, our goal is to consolidate data centers into two, what they call Tier 4 data centers, which are high security, high capability, redundant data centers that would address the backup needs that we have in case of disaster recovery, do load bearing, and enable us to be a 7x24 operator. That won't all happen in these initiatives, but it's a starting point for beginning to do that. Right now, we spend in excess of $500 million a year in direct IT costs, not counting all the related IT costs of people who depend upon IT for their operation. We have 32 raised floor data centers and 267 email centers. The last count I heard was we have over 2,000 application and data servers managed independently in the state. If we were going to start out with an IT environment, this is not where we would start. The fact is we have to begin getting a handle on this for financial reasons and security reasons and performance reasons, or it's just going to get worse. And solving the problem 5 years down the road as we invest in more and more servers is just going to be more expensive and more difficult. This is a very complex effort. It involves migrating application support for 30 years' worth of applications that we have in state government. It would be nice if they were all state-of-the-art systems, but in point of fact, they are not. So it's going to take a lot of work to make sure that we don't lose any functionality or lose any effectiveness in that conversion process. We believe over time we're going to address two problems. The operating costs for these consolidated systems environments should be lower than for the distributed costs we have right now, but we've got to make some upfront investment to get us to the point where we can manage that IT environment. The second issue that we're facing, what we term the brain drain, is the fact that there are an awful lot of people in state government and a lot of our IT staff that are going to be eligible for retirement in the next few years. We can't replace them on a one-by-one basis because the workforce won't be there, the market won't provide them. We can't afford, under our current environment, to do without their skills. So we have to begin to provide now for the loss of skills that we're going to have in years to come, or the costs are going to go even further out of sight. So we see it as cost containment, we see it as performance improvement, and we see it as increased security. Right now, this is a major trend that's happening across the country. We have gone, if you've followed any of these information technology trends, from the days of the highly centralized big iron, where everybody had a major mainframe, to a decentralized environment where everything was PC-based or client-server, and now we're coming back to a centrally managed but functionally distributed environment, which is much more efficient and much more secure. Most of the states in America today have either done IT consolidation or are in advanced stages of planning for IT consolidation. We're kind of behind the curve on that. Many major corporations have done this migration and have done it for primarily economic reasons, but also for stability and performance. So there's a lot to be done here. It's an extraordinarily complex task, and it's one we have to address on behalf of the enterprise. The things we're going to do are to develop the skills at the central level to manage this kind of an environment. It's a new business for us. We've been primarily a mainframe shop for years. We need to bring the resources in-house, human and other systems and management tools to manage this enterprise resource, and then begin to migrate the applications and data from these distributed data centers in the state and put them into the state level. We're going to be working at the same time building our capabilities for monitoring what is going on and begin to move to the limited number of data centers that I talked about. Out of this, we expect better value from the money that you're spending. More of the money will go to the program outcomes that the systems are there for. IT is not something that has value for its own sake. It's only to the degree that it supports the business side of state government services they provide to citizens. We would see more of the total spend being spent on the program side, being delivering value there, and less of it on maintaining the utility side of state government. Probably the best analogy here is you wouldn't expect every agency to build its own energy plant and water plant. They share a common utility function. These are the utility functions of information management. Through, we'll have a more efficient, more modern, contemporary system, more secure and more reliable, performing at a higher level. The money that's involved in this initiative is a substantial amount for new staff to manage this enterprise level. Again, we expect over time that attrition and transference of agency staff will mitigate some of this initial investment, but we have to have the seed capital to make this happen. We cannot just do it on the cheap, expected to work without a lot of problems. There's some money for software and tools, some money for services to help us through the process. This is not these are not resources we want to have over the long term because we hope never to have to do this again. But it's the kind of stuff that if we had had the vision and the resources 10 years ago, we would have moved in this direction then. But we're following in the footsteps of private sector and public sector entities across the country that are trying to accomplish these same goals. The third initiative that we have is not an OET initiative per se. The other two are centrally run by OET for the benefit of agencies. Here there are two major components. Part of it is closely related to security, and it's the identification and authentication function for e-government to make sure that the person that's registering to do something with us is in fact that person and that they have the right functionality. So a portion of that funding goes to that capability. The rest of it is to create the first e-licensing platform that ultimately will become the model and foundation for other activities in other agencies. Right now, this is a highly distributed process, very inefficient, manpower intensive, frustrating if you're a user trying to get your licenses through multiple agencies. Do not coordinate that very well. There needs to be a lot of business process redesign involved in this, as well as technology improvements. Give you an idea of the of how that is affecting our citizens. There's about 1 million transactions a year in the licensing area are processed. 800 people are involved in it, 40 different agencies, hundreds and hundreds of kinds of licenses. Now, you can ask the question, are all of these licenses necessary? That's your decision. If we've got to administer them, we need to find better ways of doing it, both to control the cost for that and also the performance of that function. We want to replace the 60 independent licensing systems with one major system that would be the core functionality they would all use. Doesn't mean there won't be extensions for the specific needs. Professional and business licenses does not mean that every kind of license, driver's license, for example, will be done on this system. It starts out with a few state agencies that have large volumes of important licenses, and then we'll build on that going forward in the future. The actions are building this framework, this foundational system that can be a shared logic used by multiple agencies rather than creating each one individually. Essentially, we talk about one-stop licensing. That's our goal. Maybe two or three stops in the short term while we're getting these agencies on board. But for the agencies that are involved, which are five agencies right now, it will be a significant improvement over the process. The slide shows the boards that we're starting out with. There are obviously many others that we want to bring on board in future years. And for each case, there'll be a business case and a recognition of what the leveraging point for that investment might be.
That's what I'll say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's interesting because I suspect there's so many licenses, there's so many stakeholders. Last time I got my hair cut, I got kind of read the Riot Act on this combination of the barber and cosmetology. They're saying, we're barbers. We have nothing to do with the guys or the people doing women's hair, you know, so it's like, so there I am, you know, the first thing I have to do is write a letter saying, no, they're looking at consolidating services to deliver services in a more effective way, but I suspect there are stakeholders in each one of these that you know aren't real happy with some of this consolidation. What are you finding with that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, in the analysis process that we used looking over IT initiatives for the state this past fall, we had meetings with many of these agencies that had independent licensing systems and wanted to see them pursued. And part of it was a misconception that this is all the licensing is going to be uniform and that it'll be as easy to get a doctor's license as it is a barber's license or a plumber's license. In fact, all this does is simplify the infrastructure that they'll use in common and eliminate a lot of the weights. A lot of these licenses are paper-based, so you send in a document, and sometime later somebody sends you a response, and then you send them in a check, and they send you another response. This would put it all online so that the transactional part as opposed to the qualitative part licensing would be severely streamlined.
Thank you.
You'd be an expert on barbers.
Well, surely I am with my hairstyle. An expert on the barber.
But this is addressing the technological infrastructure for licensing, not the regulatory function of licensing.
Okay, go ahead.
Out of this process, we want a better and more economical process that serves all citizens, takes some of the confusion out of starting up a business or a profession where you have to go to multiple agencies to register and license. And in some cases, it is entirely possible, as we have seen, for somebody to start up in an occupation and not be aware that they didn't have a license that they were expected to have, because there's no central way of identifying that, yes, you need the professional license, but you also need a business license or an environmental license to conduct your business. So this is designed to be a significant help to the citizens as well as to provide value to the agencies by streamlining their business processes. Money that's involved in this, of this $15 million, approximately $2.5 million goes to creating that core functionality off the state's website for authentication and identification. That's something that will be used in every subsequent e-government application that's built. So we're building it once and using it many times rather than replicating it each time as its current practice. The balance of it is for primarily software and procurement purchase services to implement those first license types that are in this process. The next initiative is related to how do we do governing information management in the state, and it's more than just information technology. We're trying to manage information more effectively. This is very simply increasing the staff capabilities of OET. The people that are responsible for overseeing projects, for managing our IT portfolio, for developing the state's architecture, for developing information policies that will be used across the state, for auditing compliance with state standards and performance, and for doing reports. That staff has been cut over the last 8 years from 12 people to 4, and we simply cannot keep up with what has to be done, let alone what needs to be done in the future. So this is almost entirely staff and staff support functions for an architect, business process redesign specialist, some project managers to oversee what's happening with the expenditures in the agencies, planning people to support the direction that we're trying to take the enterprise that is state government. It also is involved in working with agencies, particularly the small agencies, on the next initiative that you'll see, working with those folks as well to try to bring them up to speed on their technology environment. Fact remains, until this year, we did not have an IT portfolio, one that looks at all the applications in state government, that looks at the projects in state government, that does a review on behalf of the state as a whole for what's happening in the agencies. Just to give you an idea of the magnitude of this, within that $500 million or $600 million IT spend, there are about 2,100 systems and applications in there. I say about because we really don't know, which we ought to be ashamed of. We know there are at least 700 that agencies have identified as mission-critical applications within their systems. And there's about 2,400 full-time dedicated IT staff. That doesn't count power users and the people that rely on IT to do major portions of their jobs. In our processes, we review at OET every IT contract above a certain threshold, which is fairly low. In this past year, the people that we have reviewed 172 IT contracts. These are just the professional and technical services contracts. This is not the hardware acquisition or software acquisition contracts, which are reviewed by Materials Management Division. That's $62 million. That's not talking about the projects that are in place, that have not yet gotten to the point of making acquisitions. We're tracking those projects in most of the agencies now to make sure that the project is well governed, it's on track, that the budget is being followed, it's observing best project management practices, and so on. This is a critical function for us, and it's one we've not been able to do. So what we're going to try to do is to continue working on the state's information architecture, which is more than just a technical architecture and technical standards. It's also information, relating the information so we can use it better, looking at our entire environment, including security and operations. Look at situations where we can reduce duplication, where we have common systems, common functions that are being developed independently. We did some of that this year already. And looking at opportunities for business process redesign. The simple fact is that what happens behind the technology is often based on pen and ink days. We need to look at opportunities to streamline the business process and gain a measure of maturity in how we approach the integration of technology with business to run more efficiently. Otherwise, we are in a model that cannot be sustained economically and cannot continue to provide the standards of performance people have come to expect. The final part of that particular initiative is really relating to decision-making, providing information to executive branch and legislative branch leaders, and also reaching out to local government units and others who are, in most cases, in worse shape than we are in that area, and trying to accomplish that portion of our mission that's identified in statutes. The outcome is simple: improved accountability and value for your IT investment. We get more for our money, and that more of that money is spent on the program side and less on the plumbing, if you will, of state government. That's a relatively small amount of money, $612,000 the first year, $741,000 subsequent years. And again, most of that money is in professional staff in specialties like architecture and business process redesign. The last initiative is an initiative that doesn't benefit OET other than it's tied to our security initiative. Small agencies and boards, and there are dozens of them, are largely in the dark ages as far as technology. They may have computers, but in many cases they are obsolete, they are poorly protected, they are not well supported. Often a disproportionate amount of their budget is spent just trying to keep outdated hardware running. It's a little more complicated than just buying them new boxes and new software, because in many cases they don't know what their information needs are. So what we proposed is that we would have a partnership between OET and the Department of Administration to work with these small agencies, beginning with a group that's identified in here, but moving on to others, that would help them develop business plans that would identify what their primary customers' needs are, then a technology plan to see how that can be realized through the use of technology, then buy standardized software that comports with our architecture and ties in safely into our network, and then put it into place for them. This is not long-term support for these agencies. It's trying to bring them up to the 21st century and so that they'll be stable and secure and able to operate. It then falls on those agencies to keep that plan alive and in their operations go forward. But it does have immediate benefit for many of them who are operating on stuff that they shouldn't operate with. It's just bad technology and it's badly deployed. We're going to start out doing it with the Asian Pacific Council, the libraries, Library for the Blind, State Academies, Mental Health, and CAP Board. There are probably 30 more agencies like that need our help, that never rise to the level of visibility to get adequate funding. Try to address them and address their generally specialized customer groups' needs for technology support. The outcomes from that is to help these people get back on their feet. It's heart-wrenching to hear from some of these organizations that are absolutely committed to serving their constituencies and are very frustrated by the technologies rather than enabled. We will then create, we hope, a framework for them to get better support at a more reasonable price than they are doing right now, which is often uncoordinated and not terribly well thought out. And many of these agencies are very excited at the prospect that somebody's actually caring how they do their business. We're enthusiastically supportive of this. And this also ties back to the creating of one environment that can be efficiently managed and supported over time. This initiative, the money that's going into here, part of it is going into services. This is largely to the Management Analysis Division of the Department of Administration. The balance of it is for hardware and software acquisition, which we will guide them to see to the installation of these systems.
Mr. Chairman, this is Gopal Khanna again. To summarize, what the state really needs is focus in these five areas, and we need to work and develop a coherent strategy and a plan, as was put forth in that picture where you saw what our operating model is, focusing and enhancing and building security, e-government solutions, e-licensing solutions, consolidating at the same time, leveraging and taking advantage of aggregation, building a more robust and strong information management system, and get a better understanding, deeper understanding of our IT spend across the enterprise and leveraging those assets for the benefit of the entire enterprise, and supporting the small agencies, which can at times be the weakest link and therefore create the security nightmare that we may have downstream. Having said that, we need to, again, remain focused at one end objective, and that's what we've tried to do in these presenting these initiatives to you, Mr. Chairman and members. Our goal is to achieve the outcomes of an environment that will be more effective, give better accountability, more secure for the citizens, stronger governance in place, improve the service levels both internal to internal customers as well as external customers, and greater citizen access. That is our end goal in presenting these initiatives to you. They all tie in together and will make our government better and more effective. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Before we get into questions, Mr. Watson, please ask to leave in a minute or so. I had advised the committee members that if you're approached and people start suggesting to you that there's some areas in the budget that probably people want to have enhanced, some things that are beyond the governor's budget, we should probably get bills introduced, not wait till we're at the end and having amendments prepared. Tom Bodern, who is our Senate counsel, is going to be gone for a while. His father passed away, and so he's out of the country, and he's going to be having to spend some time wrapping up the affairs and so forth. So Mr. Watson will be filling in as Senate counsel for this budget division during that time period. So to the extent that you need bills prepared or you have things that require legal attention, Mr. Watson will be doing that on an interim basis. So, Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really struggling with this because we had, every agency's been before us, and the IT list is just huge. I believe it was finance on the MAP system. They want $6.5 million to just keep the thing limping along until they can replace it with a $46 million system. So I appreciate this document that you guys have presented us, but is there somewhere a plan as how in the heck is all this going to work out so that we can upgrade the whole state maybe in one fell swoop or something?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, sir, we do. As a matter of fact, the governor has presented a very coherent and comprehensive strategy with $213 million requested for all technology investments. What we presented to you today is the $47.5 million that is needed to secure the infrastructure and support the infrastructure. Bulk of the investment in technology will have to be made at the agency level, where each agency brings their own competencies to support and modernize their systems and therefore make their program delivery more effective. So, yes, sir, there is indeed a comprehensive approach to the technology investment. And, yes, you will be seeing in different committees requests from different agencies for their very specific solutions that need to be deployed.
Paulo?
We'll see.
That is my concern, that you've got all these different agencies all over the place. And why isn't it or it makes sense to me that it would be better to be a coordinated effort, you know, not necessarily coming from finance or revenue or coming from maybe your department saying that this is what we need as a state to bring us up to snuff on our technology, instead of each individual department kind of doing their own thing.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we have put in place just now a master plan to start leading us down that track of coordination across agencies. Fact is, funding-wise and mission-wise, individual agencies have their own priorities and their own direction. What we're trying to do is bring them into convergence, not conversion, not bring them abruptly to some point, but start pointing to a future date that as they retire systems and replace hardware, we're doing it according to standards and in ways that will be interoperable and be able to share information. Right now, our budgets are distributed among all of the state agencies. Some states have elected to centralize their IT budget and set the priorities and manage the systems centrally. There, a lot of efficiencies are possible under that scheme. There's also some problem of IT then being disconnected from the business it served. I'm not here to suggest there's a perfect solution to that. We do have to do a better job of coordinating those business needs, the technical solutions, and the underlying infrastructure services that support them all. We're focusing in this initiative on infrastructure, the underlying piece, so that it is capable, whatever direction we choose to go, is capable of supporting that.
But I think part of the question that we're struggling with is that, for instance, as an example, the MAP system, it's the procurement system. It produces our fiscal notes and so forth, and virtually everybody has said it's failing, it's falling apart. But let's patch it up and then come back at a later time. At some point, what systems do we have to say we got to quit patching things and just decide we're going to upgrade now? And how do we make those priorities known? Which ones? How do we select them?
Mr. Chairman, the governance process that we started in place last year, it is not mature, but it's improving, is designed to bring business leads, agency heads, working with IT together to set those priorities for the administration. It would be unfair to say that we're doing it well, but we are doing it better than we were before. In the case of the major systems, our focus is on shared systems rather than unique systems. So we're going to be trying to build into new proposals that come forth what other customers can this application serve, what old systems can be retired, so that we are making those investments have as much value as they possibly can. Some of them will be administered centrally, the utility functions and infrastructure functions. Some of them will be administered within one agency to serve partner agencies, and some will always be done uniquely to particular agencies to suit their mission. But we're trying to have all of that go through the same process of planning and coordination scrutiny before they're implemented, not lamenting what happened after it's done.
Well, we do want to make sure that the systems work and that they can talk to each other and so forth, but as an example, when the Department of Revenue has a 1968 system, at some point, we have to say, we have to figure out where the priorities are going to be, because I don't think we're going to be able to put all the money into all the requests here. But at some point, what needs to be upgraded and what can be delayed, and where do we patch and where do we just bite the bullet? I don't know, but. Senator Roebling, I thought, had a question. Senator Olsen.
Thank you. On your slide number 21, page 11, under services, that $9,400,000? Am I reading that right?
Chairman, Senator, that's correct.
Okay. My concern is that, what did we read? We got 2,400 systems or computer. Is the state big enough that they can do all this stuff themselves? Because I know in the past there's been contractors coming in from Florida, working here, flying back for the weekend for months and months and years. I mean, is that the best spending of our money? Can we maybe develop our own internal system that we have these people as staff and build these? Because, it's got to be huge.
Mr. Lally or
Mr. Chairman and Senator, we've been fighting that battle for 15 or 20 years at least that I've been involved in at the state level. The fact is, IT generally is funded on an opportunity basis. When there's a new system comes in, we get the money to build it, but not the money to sustain it. And by and large, what we do is we'll have a mix of a cadre of systems managers and developers that we'll contract for that'll come in, create the system, and then turn over the operation of that system to the permanent staff. There are good and bad points about that. We aren't supporting a development staff, which is a specialization within IT, in times when we don't need it. And we can have then access to the most current skills that are available in the marketplace. The downside is we don't provide all the opportunities we would like for our staff to grow and develop in that process. But the simple fact is those 2,400 people are running like crazy just to keep the existing systems running. We have to go out and supplement that workforce right now. Now, as we get to the point where we're using common development methodologies and standardized databases and project management and so on, then the opportunity to move staff around with greater flexibility, keep those people fully employed, fully utilized to their ability, will improve. But I think it's unrealistic to think we're ever going to get away from having to bring people in from the outside. Plus, it's a good way to get new ideas brought into government as well. But that's just the nature of it. The balance of that varies from agency to agency depending on their resources and the maturity of their applications and what's going on. The other complication is when systems are funded, they tended to be funded starting July 1st when the budget kicks in. And so we have this massive amount of activity in remodeling or designing systems at the same time in all the agencies. So it makes sharing of those resources rather difficult. And trying to stagger out that workload is no small task when you're talking about these highly specialized positions. An IT person is not an IT person is not an IT person. You wouldn't necessarily use a Java developer to go in and fix an old COBOL application and depend upon them to sustain a server when it needs repair work, any more than you would expect a probate lawyer to conduct a criminal trial. We have to have the right mix of people, and that's an ongoing challenge for us in this marketplace.
Sam Jungmeier?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you hit on some things, and I guess as Senator Olsen asked more questions, I was somewhat satisfied till the questions now opened up some new things. So I thought we had a plan in several ways. I'm trying to organize my thoughts as I think through this. But as we move forward, it occurs to me that we ought to be dealing with the agencies that need the interoperability first. And I think I keep hearing you say that today there's more standardized software programming out there where, you know, understandably as states all got into the computer systems, they had to kind of develop their own software, their own programs. But it seems like you've been telling us and other agencies have been telling us that there is some standardized softwares out there that we can work towards this interoperability. But I think what we need from you, and you just hit one of them, was as the budget starts on the July 1st or whatever, we need some advice as to how can we stagger that so we can do this. I guess that's probably the thing that I'm thinking we haven't. We've gotten these presentations on what we need, how much it costs, how do we implement it, but we've never really seen a written plan of how do we as legislators then deal with it in order to make sure this all melds together smoothly. Do we have something like that in the works?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jungbauer, we are working on a roadmap for IT development to carry out the master plan. We don't have the details in it because we frankly don't have resources to do that. We're trying to have three things happen. One is establish the standards, and the standards are not the software standards, development and architectural standards, so that we're dealing with a couple databases rather than 40 databases. We're dealing with a couple development methodologies, a couple project management methodologies, instead of all of the myriad ones that exist. And we're also trying to do that in an environment where we take that 1968 system from revenue and make it work with the 2007 licensing system that we're going to be developing. Because we've got to find a way to integrate that. And that right now is a massive manpower-intensive activity every year. As we try to keep these applications running. We're getting better at that, but we're not there.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of a follow-up on that, I was on the revisors subcommittee in changing over that whole computer system. I guess in that roadmap, are we going to be able to deliver back to the legislature? It would be very helpful to myself, and I'm guessing to other legislators, to know the age of the systems and to know where do we focus our efforts first, because, again, as we hear testimony, it's every agency comes in, we need this, we need this, we need this. But I think in that roadmap, we need to know what are the age of the systems and, you know, what needs to be an all-or-nothing changeover when we're in the interim.
Mr. Chairman.
Those kind of things.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunbar, you've just defined the architectural portfolio for information in the state, and we've started to build that now in the last year for the first time. So we know for those major applications, we know some of the details on them, including age, customers served, what's the platform, what's the operating system, database, a lot of those kind of details. There's a lot more systems out there that we haven't got the information on. We're going to try to collect each year and incrementally build that. We also want to look at the performance metrics and the technical condition and business value of those systems, which is really critical. The age of a system by itself doesn't mean it's a bad system. It just means it's limited in what you can do with it going forward. There are bad systems that have been created that are relatively new if they're not well-designed and well-executed and well-supported. So that evaluation process isn't an easy thing to do. That's why we need the analysts working with the agencies, looking at each system and evaluating it, collecting that information so that we can then say, look, 2 years from now, the MAP system is going south. Every indication is it's exceeded its life expectancy. The technologies are obsolete and unsupported. We have two choices. We can invest in it and modify it, fix it, replace it, or we can deal with the consequences of it. Right now, we don't have the ability to look across state government and give you that picture.
Sir John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question, I guess it sounds like we're working towards all these right ends, and maybe I'm drawing my own conclusion here, but it occurs to me that the Office of Enterprise Technology, if it executes all these properly, you, in point of fact, will save us more than you cost us? Is that the hope in the end?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, absolutely, as that is indeed the desired outcome we're looking for, and it's achievable, and it's possible. But it's a huge ship that needs to be turned around. We have to put a lot of practices in place. We have just started our work, and a lot needs to be done.
Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, I have a big challenge for you, to try and coordinate the Senate and the House technology systems so that we all have similar systems among us here at the legislature. It might be more of a political challenge.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling.
I've often wondered if we aren't better coordinated.
We're not miracle workers, but we are trying to do that. Chris Boozy, our Chief Information Security Officer, already meets with your staff in the House and Senate to try to get the security of these systems up to snuff to protect them. We'd like to work more in depth with you, but right now that's a significant improvement.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, committee members, just to add to that, one of the things that is key, a key part of our enterprise security initiative, is to make sure that all of the agencies are involved in the processes and that we're coming together as an entire community. And we do have representatives from the House, the Senate, the revisors, and our thought is as we roll out solutions that will be applicable for the entire government, that the House and the Senate and the constitutional officers and higher ed, all organizations are going to see benefit by these government-wide solutions. So what you're talking about is the comprehensive plan all coming together. That is happening in this particular area.
Well, and Senator Roebling, the Senate was a little slow into getting into some of computers and technology. We had a lot of members who are gone now, but they just didn't see a lot of sense in spending a lot of money on that stuff. And the House got into it a little bit earlier, and we've been trying to play catch-up since. And, of course, the last few years with the budget cuts, it's made it a little harder to do it. But, there are challenges there, but we have some catching up to do. But, of course, the House is going to get even further ahead of us because they have more toys and tools and stuff. So. if we spend $1 million in each body, well, the other body's going to be ahead of us on that one. I've got a couple of questions. your office doesn't just service other agencies for free. We just had Department of Revenue in here and talking about how they're working on a pilot project where they're loaning some of their, I think, their people to you. Can you kind of describe, you know, how do these agencies work with you so that I think you bill for your services and how much money is going back and forth and how all that works out? It funds your office, but what, you know, I don't know where the money is in the agencies and how it gets through you.
Mr. Chairman, a substantial portion of our budget, like $85 million out of about 93, something in that range, is money that is contracted for by other agencies paying us for specific services. It's not appropriated to us. It's money they pay for network services, operating systems, server management, all the functions of the infrastructure of state government. And they pay according to rates that are negotiated each year with the Department of Finance under their oversight, approved by the Department of Finance, and based on, most part, on the actual cost of providing those services. And the idea behind this logic is simple. We can consolidate that demand, provide for it centrally, and provide it cheaper than can be done by each agency on its own. And that's the logic that underlies this. In the case of the Department of Revenue, we've taken over management of some of their functions. We've taken some of the staff, about a dozen, I think, people from Revenue now work for the Office of Enterprise Technology, some of them still in the Revenue building, maintaining that infrastructure, and they pay us for that. And that way they're providing the services, but their focus shifts from managing wires and servers and boxes to managing taxes. And that's the model that we want to see extended under the consolidation proposal to many other agencies.
So where does this lead? Because as all these agencies want more and more computers, presumably they're going to need your services some more, so these offices are going to be asking for more money to pay you, and then you'll need more money to keep going. We're trying to track where the dollars are going to go around here.
Mr. Chairman, going forward, the way I see things happening is, one is activity pertaining to consolidation, so we can aggregate and optimize and reduce the cost structure from an operating perspective is one activity that you'll see happening. Second would be modernizing systems at the agency level. So you will see requests coming from agency for very agency-specific applications that would have to be designed for, whether it be integrated revenue system or maps replacement or related to any other agency. So you'll see that happening because those systems will replace, hopefully, and put out of business some of the old applications that have been sitting there for 10, 20, 15, 20, 25 years that need to be retired and will not support the needs of the future. So you will see that happening. Now,
I'll see it happening that they're going to need more money for more computers
to
pay you.
Because systems modernize, and that's what you're seeing when agencies are coming to you,
right,
and whether it be integrated revenue system or others. That's the investment that would have to be made in technology infrastructure, because that's the backbone of delivering the services. No government services today can be delivered without leveraging and using information technology, whether it be education, healthcare, public service, public safety, or human services. And there'll be need for technology to make the delivery happen in a more efficient and cost-effective manner, more so going forward, because we'll have to deal with the brain drain that's happening at the same time. So as people leave the workforce, we have no choice but to invest in technology to make up for the loss of workforce.
So you're going to be ramping up. Is that what, in the long run? I mean, your office is just going to be getting bigger and doing more stuff.
Mr. Chairman, it's a double-edged sword. As we take over and manage the data centers, the likes of Department of Revenue and others, that staff would move over to OET, and hopefully over a period of time, as attrition happens, we should have fewer people supporting the computing complex over a period of time. So yes, it'll appear as if OET is growing, but it's growing because there's a comparable offset in other agencies, at least in the consolidation phase of this exercise going forward.
Okay. Let me ask a different question here. 2005, I think security was an issue, and I think we had about $2 million to your office to start planning for security systems, and now we're talking about $17 million, and there's going to be some ongoing costs. what can you tell us, at least in a public way, about, you know, some of the security things that, this is jumping up quite a bit, of course, and security is an issue. You talked about the fact you can't go get Norton and install it and so forth, but what's going on in the security area that is causing all these things? We want to be secure, but we don't want to spend a lot of money and just call it security when it's not. It may or may not be accomplishing the purpose.
Mr. Chairman, when I came on board on August 15th of 2005, one of the things I realized that we were really behind on our security readiness in terms of dealing with our applications and mission-critical solutions. The legislative auditors came up with their findings that we were indeed weak, and I came before the legislature last year, and we got $1.9 million. As a result of that, we were able to build a security team and bring on board Chris Busey as our Chief Information Security Officer. I would like him to take a couple of minutes to give you an update of what has been accomplished thus far with this $1.9 million and where we are going with it in the future.
Ms. Busey.
Mr. Chair, committee members, when I came on board in June of 2006, I had some difficult decisions to make. We had the $1.9 million beginning July 1st to help start up the Enterprise Security Program. It was very clear to me at that point in time that $1.9 million truly needed to be a startup pool of money because the cost of the program was going to be much larger than that. So one of the decisions that we had to make right away is the strategy going to be we pick certain security areas and do those particular areas really well and ignore others? Or do we try and lay out the whole structure of the program and hire the management staff to oversee a comprehensive program? And I actually chose option B. Either option, though, it's important to realize, had risks. The first option, if we choose one area and we do it well, we're ignoring other areas, and the risk that we face is really security risk. The other option is really a funding risk. If we go and we lay out the framework for a comprehensive security program and we ultimately don't get the money to implement the program, we have some managers and architects with no people to manage and no tools to manage for the security program as a whole. But since we started in July, one of the very first things we recognize is that the program that we develop has to be a program that represents the needs of all of government, not only the executive branch, but some of the other players that we support as well, including higher education and the legislative and judicial branches as well. So one of the first things that we did is we created an Information Security Council. And that's an advisory body that reports to me. And the number one goal of that group is to help us find enterprise-wide security solutions, policies, procedures, and standards, and tools that are appropriate for the government as a whole. We thought that was critical to have that governance structure in place. After we had the governance structure in place, then what we started focusing on is defining really what needs to be done, not who will be doing it or how it will be done, but really what are the important things that need to be done from a security perspective. We knew, I knew from my work in the Legislative Auditor's Office that we had serious weaknesses all across state government. So I wanted to focus, if we were going to build this program from scratch, what is it that we need to be done? And I wanted to use the entire community to help me provide the input on that, as well as a lot of documents from the National Institute of Science and Technology and other sources as well. But I'm happy to report that we have put together a definition of what we think is a comprehensive security program. It includes about 20 functional areas that we think need to be done from a central utility perspective to support all the agencies. We have an organizational chart that we've put in place that really identifies what that program looks like. We also worked on getting some awareness throughout the executive branch. We held an Enterprise Security Planning Summit. We brought in all the leaders across government, the deputy commissioners, the commissioners, the CIOs, to sit down and really talk turkey about what needs to be done and explain where we are today, why we're at tremendous risk, and where we need to be in order to overcome the gap that we currently see. We also worked hard to address the OET security weaknesses that were pointed out in the Legislative Auditor's Report. Those weaknesses primarily addressed mainframe security, one of the key platforms that we manage. But we went beyond that as well. We used part of our $1.9 million to hire some talented professionals, and we're now doing a comprehensive security assessment of everything else that OET as an organization does as well, so that we made sure that we understood all of our weaknesses across the organization. And then we started focusing on some tactical areas as well. In particular, we implemented an enterprise-wide policy on portable computing devices. If you read the newspaper, 8 out of 10 of the incidents that you read about are stolen laptops, stolen cell phones, stolen thumb drives, and those kind of issues. We implemented a policy that says basically that that not public data should not be stored on these devices, period. However, we recognize that that wasn't a realistic situation in many cases. So we said that if it absolutely needs to be done for legitimate business purpose, then that data has to be encrypted. And through the Security Council and help with the rest of the agencies, we then went out and we identified and we evaluated products and we implemented a solution for the government as a whole, so that not only do we have the policy, but we had the corresponding solution in place that the agencies could use, because on their own they would not have been able to do that evaluation and come up with those solutions, particularly for the small agencies with few resources. And then we held training on that solution as well. So I believe we've held now about a dozen classes on how to install and administer that product, and we had about 90 professionals from across government come in and take the training so that they can implement the solution out in the fields. And there's been successes already. We've had laptops stolen where the solution has been in place and there has not had to be public notification because of that. That's one example of the way the security program is going to work. We're going to work as a community. We're going to define what needs to be done. We're going to work on what things need to be central, what things can be done at agencies, and we're going to help build central solutions to make it all happen. Other tactical areas we worked on in our initial year here is email security. We put in place processes where all agencies can send email securely back and forth between agencies and from government to citizen. That's in process right now of being rolled out. We're going to have an enterprise policy on that as well as a technical solution, and we've held training for all the government agencies for that solution. We're working on threat assessment and vulnerability assessment right now. One of the things that I think is one of the critical weaknesses that we have right now is government systems are scanned by high-tech tools by hackers constantly. We need to do that kind of work ourselves. So one of the first initiatives that we're taking on in government is we use the entire community, the security community, the big agencies, and we've identified some tools that can be purchased and managed centrally for the entire government as a whole. And what's important about that is that ultimately what we're going to be saying in policy is that every mission-critical government system is going to need to be scanned by these kind of tools at least weekly. So if there's vulnerabilities in our systems, we find them, we patch them, and we fix them now before they're exploited by hackers. We're also, for all the government system development projects that are underway, including the upgrade of the state's PeopleSoft payroll system, the work that was been done on the new MAP system, the enterprise email solution that was talked about earlier, we have security professionals that are involved in those projects to make sure that when we develop systems in government, that security professionals design controls into those systems when they're built so that we don't deploy insecure solutions. That's what we like to think of as building security in from the ground up. In addition to that process, eventually where we're going to go with the security program is that every system will be certified as it's rolled out, but the developers that are out in the agencies developing the systems will be able to use the same types of security tools in the development process that we're using in the security process to do the evaluation. So that's one of the plans. Other tactical areas, we've been working on business continuity and disaster recovery, probably one of our worst areas in the security realm that I've seen since I've come on. Right now, we have a couple agencies that we think are very critical agencies that are way behind the curve, and we're working with those agencies directly to try and help them out in case there's a crisis, if in the unfortunate event of a crisis, that those agencies can continue their operations. That's kind of a high-level nutshell of what we've done to date with the $1.9 million. But it's just a starting point for a program that needs to be a very comprehensive program that needs to be a program that's adopted by all the government agencies. We need to have a common set of tools that all agencies need to use so that when we have a problem that happens out in the Department of Human Services and those people are gone because most of those employees will work 9 to 5, we need to have a central security operations center where somebody is watching the ship at all times, and we can have a coordinated effort where we can respond to security incidents and we can do all those kind of things that need to happen in a robust security environment that's monitored.
And again, the request is jumping up to about $17 million, and it's going to be an ongoing issue. It's a lot of money. Obviously, we want secured systems. What are we buying for $17 million?
For $17 million, you're paying for what the security community as a whole thinks needs to be done in order to accomplish all the security objectives in the planning and preventive controls area, in the threat mitigation area, in the business continuity, in the continuity of operations area, in the access control area. You're buying the personnel it takes to manage the solutions. You're buying hardware and software that it's going to take to do these types of functions government-wide. But I think what's important to realize is that in most government agencies, these things simply aren't being done, and therein lies the problem, that we can't go out and beg, borrow, and steal from the agencies because these agencies aren't doing most of these functions. So we have a unique opportunity to build the infrastructure once that everybody can use, and we can all take advantage of the tools. Agencies can use the tools. The people that develop our computer systems can use the tools, and we can use the tools as security professionals to watch what's going on. That's the way it's going to need to happen in a world that's going to require citizens interacting with government 24/7.
Okay, I've got a couple other questions in other areas. Did anybody else want to follow up on the security? Senator Roble.
I just had a question. You were talking about email security, and I kind of have to chuckle at some of that because it's my understanding that any email correspondence that is done from our public computers is not exactly private information. Maybe in some departments it is, but I understand that it is not for ours. It can be inspected by the press or the public at pretty much any time. So I'm just wondering, how much effort we're going to put into email security. it might not matter.
Mr. Chair, committee members, one thing that's important to realize is that when you look across the spectrum of government and all the different government agencies, there is a lot of correspondence that goes government to government and government to citizen that does contain not public data as defined by the Minnesota Data Practices Act. Our goal with email security is when these organizations need to communicate through email that the messages that are sent across the wires are encrypted so that if somebody does intercept that message, that data cannot be deciphered and read in clear text. And most email systems, unless you have specific solutions in place, such as the one that we're deploying right now, the messages can be intercepted and they can be read because they are sent in clear text. That's the purpose of this particular solution.
Sir Roebling, there are very few parts, I believe, the Data Practices Act could apply to the legislature. The telephone records is one. We have to declare how much we're spending on, when we get our long-distance phone calls, we have to sign off on that. Those are public records. But I don't know that correspondences with our constituents is something that has to be made public if the legislature doesn't choose to. And certainly if you're working on legislation and so forth, nobody can require you to disclose what you're working on. When you introduce the bill, of course, that is public data. So I don't think that there. But if you send out an email, if it's not encrypted, I don't think the law says that it's public. But the hackers can maybe find it. So,
Mr. Chair, I think the law does say that it's public.
Okay, I'd have to. I'm not sure about.
Okay. Apart from us, at least as legislators. I know the press has actually got...
That may be Senate rules, though, not necessarily data practices. Well, we can double-check on that. So, I've got a question or two. The small agency technology, you're providing some help for some. Now, the governor's asking for about $2 million in, but I'm looking at the list of those that you currently help, the CAP Board, the Asian Pacific Council, and so forth, and I'm not quite sure that you're providing about $2 million so far, so is this intended to expand the number of agencies, small agencies you're going to help? Because
Mr. Chairman,
I don't think you're spending that now. So
that money is earmarked first for those agencies. We'll
right.
address those agencies, and then the balance of the funds, and this is the first time we've ever done this, so this is speculative. What balance is left over, we'll start working with the other population that's in there. We haven't done any work with those agencies yet.
Okay.
So those will be the first five or six agencies that we will work with the first fiscal year of the biennium. The second fiscal year we'll be working with others as resources permit.
Okay, another question. You talked about the electronic licensing system. Is this something that we can do within the agencies, or do we have to outsource these projects of licensing? You know, have somebody else do it? Or do we know that?
Mr. Chairman, right now we are managing various licenses systems all across the enterprise.
Okay.
The approach over here is to have the basic framework that is going to be cross-cutting across all agencies so that it can have a basic infrastructure in place and then develop their unique solutions on top. By taking that approach, we are really optimizing, aggregating, and making it more cost-effective, as well as resolving this whole problem of the architecture and achieving a significant degree of standardization, so that when the citizens come in, they have one-stop shopping experience rather than going all over the place for their licenses. So to answer your question, can the agencies do it? Yes, they've been doing it, but we need to move away from that solution. Other states are also moving towards an e-licensing solution that's across the enterprise. And if there's anything else that you may want to add, John.
Mr. Chairman, specific direction of your question, we do not intend to outsource the administration of the licensing function.
Mm-hmm.
We will be contracting for staff to help do the development of the system, but there's no intention of outsourcing the administration of it once it's completed.
Okay, thank you.
Relates back to Senator Osteen's question earlier.
Okay. One other question I've got, and let's see. You've had staff reductions in recent years, as everybody else has, too. How has that affected your ability to get your mission done?
Mr. Chairman, I came on board on August 15, 2005.
Right.
And the first thing I did was I looked at the statute and said, what is the intent? Where do we want to go into the future? And I've been trying to position the enterprise to look outwards and into the future and then structure our services so that we can serve our agency customers and they in turn can be effective in terms of delivery of their services to the citizens. Have we been impacted going again? I don't have the history of beyond my being here, and I'm not quite sure how much time I need to spend to look back as to what the impact has been, but we certainly know that we need to build competencies in all these areas that we are looking at and have identified today, because these competencies are needed for the future. We don't have security capabilities. We need to build on them. We do not have e-licensing kind of solutions. We need to build on them. We need to make our portfolio management more robust and strong. We have started our work, but we need to do a lot more in that area. We need to assist the small agencies because they can be points of failure and as was pointed out, be the weakest link and therefore create security instances for us that will be rather huge threats, could potentially be huge threats. We need to mitigate that and minimize that. So we need to work in these areas going forward. So my hope is that as we do that, we'll bring new competencies into the enterprise and look forward and build a better solution for our state.
Well, Mr. Lally said that you know an IT is different from an IT from an IT, depending upon the area and need the specialty. I'm just wondering if, you know, the budget cuts have prevented you from doing some of the things you need to do. Are you looking for more people? You've indicated it sounds like you do need more people, but I'm just wondering if you can address what
Mr. Chairman, as looking at the budget the way it was, I saw that as my baseline.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the future needs going forward. So what we're trying to build is going forward from here, and therefore are looking at what competencies we need to bring into the organization going forward. If we did not have the budget cuts, would those skills have sufficed and helped us? I don't know. Maybe in some areas they could have. But looking forward, I think so the paradigm is quite different, and we need to move very aggressively and bring the skills and competencies that will take us there. Now, John, you may have some more historical perspective to share.
Mr. Lally?
Mr. Chairman, About 6 or 8 years ago, I was working in the agencies working with what was then the Office of Technology. The staff at that time that dealt with project management, portfolio to the limited extent it was, analysis, all that, was 12 people, including the architects and everybody else. Right now I've got 4 doing this, more work than had to be done then, but trying to accomplish it. And we're doing it very superficially. That's the reality of it. Those have been not conscious decisions as much as just the way things go. We've lost staff to layoff as well as to attrition, and we have not been able to replace them. The state has 1 enterprise architect to deal with business information, application, and technological architecture. We have 3 project managers that manage our project management system, do all the project oversight, do all the agency liaison functions, and all the project analysis piece. We have 1 person that is responsible for all of our research, all of our policy, and all of the legislative support functions that we have. I am the department's planner. I am the state IT planner, the entire department. We don't have enough to provide support for IT governance and for central management of IT. It's as simple as that.
Senator Olstein.
This kind of gets back to what we talked about earlier. You know, I'm kind of like, I'm the new guy on the block here, and it sounds like I'm walking into a system that's been broken. And, you know, you came in 2005, so I guess you're pretty innocent too. But, you know, how it got to this point, I suppose, could be hours of debate. But I'm interested in this idea of a central technology office. As I think about this, and you talk about all these overlaps and all these security things, and it just, I'd be interested to see, how would we go about pursuing what that might look like and the benefits and the pluses and minuses of having a central IT system for the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olstein, we are moving towards a federated model. Over the last 18, 19 months, what we have constructed is a federated model, which basically in simple terms suggests that unique applications development that are very unique to agency need to be developed and managed at the agency level. And it makes very good sense. And those systems need to be deployed because the expertise lies at the agency level. At the same time, Office of Enterprise Technology, as envisioned by the 2005 statute, becomes the organization that brings to bear standards, identifies and the enterprise architecture, defines what standards need to be followed, leverages through aggregation and consolidation the back office, the utility function. So you're absolutely right, sir. There's a lot to be gained in terms of cost effectiveness, efficiency, and standardization for the state going forward. I believe in the federated model, the advantage that we have is we leverage the agency-focused knowledge in deploying the right solutions that serve the citizens at the front end.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Khanna. And members, when we will be looking at the Department of Administration, I think on Monday, and of course, we may have some questions about the proposed merger with the Department of Employee Relations, which is being proposed there, too. So we'll see you next week. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr.